Now, in the context of the last meditation we did, we can find that our consciousness is very much affected by those core issues which resonate or cause a frequency of distortion on the very fundamental basis of our consciousness, our existence. When we were thinking about these core issues or coming to that fundamental energetic impetus which affects us throughout everything we do in life, we start to be aware of, shall we say, the chord our life is playing within, like a musical chord. A musical chord is affected by the dominant tone in it. And our entire lives are always referring back to that particular tone. Now, this understanding is so essential and key to every single person. No matter who you are, be you the most elevated personality, be you just a regular person, every one of us has a fundamental core issue upon which all else in our lives refers. It's a reference point. It's a point from which everything we are, everything we are striving to be, everything that we attempt to prove or try to forget or that we must deal with again and again is related. It is that sticky gum-like spot which draws us back at all times. It is not possible to avoid that. Now, what I find fascinating is that mainly we are not aware of this issue. It's almost like when you have tinnitus in the ear, you're hearing this tone all the time. After a while, of course, if you never experienced this, you have no idea what I mean, but after a while, it fades away. You kind of forget about it because it's always there in the background. Or you live in the city where there's always fans and motors running, and you hear and feel this, and you just block it out. You filter it out because it's always there. So you find yourself listening for something that is not that. So your concentration goes to anything that's not that sound, and you just kind of filter it away. You subtract it from your consciousness. It's a factor that is continuously being subtracted from your perception. So you're always referring to that underlying sound, even when you're subtracting the other sound, because it's constantly in the equation. I hear a sound, so minus the hum. I hear something else, minus the hum. So minus the hum is a constant. That which we are trying to remove from the experience of life in a similar way, that background fundamental core issue is that to which we relate everything. And all that we do, all that we experience is in relationship to that issue. And so either we are subtracting that issue from our perception to try to get a clear understanding of what's happening in front of us, or we are just embracing that stress, that issue, because the stimulus that's in front of us directly connects our consciousness to that feeling within. Whether we are aware of it or not, all of a sudden the reaction that we make to something that happens shocks us because it's unexpected. We never expected that this way in which we respond would occur. It's not only unexpected, but it's shocking. Where did that come from? Why do I feel like this? My response to what someone said or what someone did is so disproportional in normal consciousness. What is it relating to? What I've seen that's happening right now in the world is this energy of awareness has appeared, that we are becoming painfully aware of issues. We are becoming painfully aware of those things that have been challenging us since as long as we've been acting in this realm. And we are being forced. It's not like you have a choice. We are being forced to face our core issue. It's being pushed right in front of us. Look at it. Taste it. Smell it. Feel it. Hear it. It is your core issue. Embrace it. Now, we try to avoid this in all kinds of ways. We make excuses. We blame others. We defend ourselves. But it always comes back, especially now. It's just coming back, facing us. Now, according to how far you have progressed and advanced on the evolutionary path, this will become more or less obvious or powerful. In other words, for those who are not that far along, they may not feel it as... They will not feel it as powerfully, as clearly, and as insistently, as persistently, as one who is quite advanced along the spiritual path. And the reason for this is, like we used to say in programming, that's not a bug, that's a feature. This is not a problem, this is not a defect. This is something that's very, very good. It is something that is very, very valuable. It is something which is giving us the possibility for real liberation. Some of us have talked about liberation at great lengths. We've discussed it. We think about it. Nowadays, we may not use the word liberation. We may use the words freedom. We may use the words deep connection in our spiritual essence. We may use the words that we drop away, let go, and enter into. But when we're talking about these core issues, the term liberation is very, very relevant, very real, very actual, very personal. Because the liberation that really takes place is this freedom from the core issue. Now, how that core issue became that core issue is only ours to understand. The how. We have to find it. We have to figure it out. We have to understand its value, its point, its purpose, its meaning. It's up to us. It's our responsibility. Because this how is intimately connected to the what it is. Even if you go to some psychic or some person or whoever, and they may even tell you this is it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't help. We have to touch it. And once we touch it, we have to feel it. We have to let it shake us. We have to then feel its effect. How? And really respect how that core issue has been the background noise, the background force through everything we've ever done. It's always there. And once we deal with it, and dealing with it does not mean you just know it's there and boom, it's gone. Dealing with it doesn't mean you put a big X. You can X a lot of stuff, but you can't X the core issue. The exit meditation can help you, help us, in all the other stuff, but it's useless for the core issue. But what it really does is this exit cleanses away all that other noise so that the real source becomes clear. It's like if you have a cacophony of noise, you can't pick out anything in particular, even if it's somebody playing the guitar in the middle of all this noise, because it's so mixed, it's so distorted by all these totally different frequencies that don't fit together. So by Xing out all this other stuff, you drop it away, drop it away, drop it away, and then you're left with the core. You cannot X out the core because the core and you are one. Your integrity as a being, as spirit, has been challenged at the core, the essence of what you are. The essence of what you are, the integrity that is you, that you keep, you always strive to have, has been challenged at that level. And it has created a spiritual reverberation that so deeply affects you because it is your core responding to a challenge, to an insult, best word, to your integrity, an insult to your integrity. Now, probably the only method that's easily available to any of us to help us deal with the core. And it's possible that nothing can cure it in the sense that it will always remain a weakness within us. It's some way in which our integrity, our essence of being can be insulted. But there is a way to work out those events that caused us right now to embrace the distortion that is taking place everywhere because of that core issue being there. In other words, you can't get rid of the vulnerability, the human condition. The condition of life is a vulnerable one. There's nothing we can do about that. The capacity to love, which is our most cherished capacity as beings, includes with it the capacity to feel pain. If you feel, you can feel love, you can feel pain. You can't feel only love and no pain. Because the nature of feeling is that all feelings can be felt. If you really want to feel, you have to feel everything. You can't say, I'll feel this, but I won't feel that. Because if you say so, the same rejection you place upon one aspect of feeling will automatically be applied to all aspects of feeling. Because feeling is a very simple thing. You just feel. And when you start picking and choosing what you're going to feel, you affect the entire process, because it's a very simple thing. You just feel. As soon as you start filtering anything, you affect everything. Most people don't understand that point. It's a very simple point, but yeah, actually it's deeply connected to the root of what we are, of our essence, of our being, deeply connected. It's either you feel or you don't feel. There's like, you know, I don't feel so much, or yeah, it's either you are a feeling being aware or you are restricted. Everybody feels, but everybody is restricted more or less. So if you wish to actually be aware, you have to feel. And that vulnerability, it's not a weakness. It's just the nature of the organism, the spiritual organism. It's the nature. It's just the way it works. You can't think of a better way. It's perfect. The way life is cannot be figured out to be better. It's already been made perfectly. We just have to accept it. That's all. Work with it, again, not against it. So the core issue that reverberates everywhere throughout our life can be dealt with in its specific manifestation of our consciousness. It can be dealt with. In other words, let's say a core issue. Let me start again. 100% your core issue did not manifest in this lifetime. 100%. But you can trace it to childhood or some other particular event that you might be able to remember. You can trace it to it occurring at this time. You might engage in some psychological therapy to reveal something from the childhood. And you will think that, yeah, this is the issue. This is where the insult to my spiritual integrity took place. And now I'm dealing with it. And once I've dealt with it, I shall be liberated. But even though you might feel good for some time, it does not liberate you. Because that is not the core, even of this present manifestation of your being in this physical realm. Indeed, even if you go through thousands of lifetimes ago, and you may find so many manifestations, perhaps in every lifetime, where an insult is felt. And when I use the word insult, it doesn't just mean some verbal insult. It means an insult to my being, specifically to my spiritual being, to my integrity as a being. If you want to know more about that, the last book I published is just about that point, that integrity. It is such an important issue, but I'm not sure how many people actually understood the real subtlety of it, because it's the integrity we're trying to maintain. The integrity that, when it's attacked, hurts us so badly. And that insult to our integrity, you will find it in every lifetime. Every single lifetime. Unless, of course, you're living a lifetime of vacation, because you can't handle anything else. You're incapable of feeling any disturbance. So you need a vacation lifetime to feel good about yourself. So let's say you have that vacation lifetime. Okay, that's fine. That's not really counting. But every single lifetime other than the vacation ones, this insult has taken place. So you can even do regression or some form of going back through meditation and see it and even resolve it somehow in other lifetimes or feel better about it. But it doesn't do everything because that vulnerability is part of us. It's built into what we are. Now, having said that, it's not hopeless. It's not that you're always going to feel this background noise, because there is a theme to it. A theme. Like, in other words, it may be a mother theme or a father theme or a husband theme or a child theme. An insult that manifests through somebody you love, life after life after life. So you can deal with the theme and find out the most significant insult and deal with it. Now, let's say it's a mother theme or a father theme. These insults are related to the birth and the growth. So if you were to do a rebirthing technique, you know, Leonard Orr came up with this rebirthing technique. So it's now called breath work because they had some legal problem. One person out of the many thousands had some freak out, ended up dead. So now it's called breath work. It's so powerful, that was the proof of it. But rebirthing, it means to start it again, but to do it this time with your own conscious control. Instead of it being forced upon you, as birth is, you are consciously embracing that and allowing your present consciousness to be a new and purer manifestation of your energy. It helps. Maybe there are other ways somebody can do it. This is just one I think about that could work. But liberation is not going to take place, and again, I'm using that word, with the exact definition that is traditionally used, liberation, which means to be free from. Liberated from. It no longer holds. It no longer controls. It no longer restricts. To be liberated from this noise, this disturbing frequency upon which everything in our life is related. Now, I see people all the time struggling with this. You know, they can ask me a million questions. We can talk about things constantly. But I see it's always the same theme. They may even write to me or say to me, "Oh, I've finally conquered it. I feel so good about myself." And within some period of time, when they attempt to do something, it's the same theme again. These themes are quite, shall we call, archetypical, like trust. You know, we have previously said love and trust. These are the two most significant ingredients in interactions. You can love. You can love without expectation of return. You can love selflessly. You can love and wish to be of service. But when you're forced to interact, in other words, when that love is not really just emanating outwards from yourself in a selfless manner, But when there's this demand of mutual reciprocation, of exchange, trust enters into it. Because in any mutual exchange, there has to be trust. Love is the easy part, because all it requires is that you feel, and that you feel and you are aware of what you are. Love's the easy part, because it's what you are. You are love. We are love. Our essence is love. Our energy is love. But trust, a whole different thing entirely. A whole different thing. You can love someone but not trust them. That's pretty mind-boggling. You can love someone and not trust them. So the interaction that takes place is distorted by the trust factor. It's the trust factor which affects us on the integrity level. Now, I don't want to make a blanket sweeping statement that says this is everyone's core issue. It might be, but you have to find it for yourself, if it is. And if it's not, let me know so I can have some others to put on my list if I speak about it again. But it seems to me, and I know it in myself, I know it very well in myself, it's a trust issue that creates the noise of this world. It's not a love issue. Love is easy. Trust is very complex. Now, when I say love is easy, a lot of people say, huh? What? What is that supposed to mean? I mean, like you can fall in love once all the preliminary, you know, requirements are fulfilled. You can fall in love. I mean, that's not so complex. In fact, it's not at all complex. It just happens. And while you're in that state of falling in love or being in love, trust is not an issue. After all, everything is just heavenly float about. And you don't really consider trust because it's so repressed and pushed away, because it's just love. After all, these are two primary, primordial, archetypical, axiomatic principles of this universe. And the love is independent of this universe. Love transcends this universe. Love directly connects to the divine beings, to God, to Radha Krishna, to love flies past the covering or barriers that may exist anywhere. It just directly connects you to the Supreme. And therefore, we love to just feel love of God. Just let go everything and love God, because we trust God. Because we don't have any daily interactions. It's not like God is directly, that we can perceive, responsible for our pain or pleasure. God doesn't like hand us a gift. God doesn't like take away something. Now, some people see it that way. They say, God gave me this gift. I love God. But then God took away too much. I hate God. God's responsible. I don't trust God. Even in spiritual life, there's a honeymoon period. I always used to be amused at, I admit it's cynical. I'm sorry. It's just my analytical side manifesting. But I was always amused at honeymoon period, because I'm always thinking, just wait. Or the honeymoon period, not only of newlyweds, but of newly connected spiritualists who feel the honeymoon bliss and rush of love of God and spirituality. And where does it go different? Where does something other than the love enter into it? When there's an interaction. Because that's what starts to impact on the level of trust. After a period of time, trust becomes an issue again. That you did something, you did something that shouldn't have been done. Or you did something that affects the expectation. It's against the expectation. Or it's wrong. Or it's an injustice. Whatever our personal criteria are for trusting something. Or maybe it's just something that's not expected. Well, how can you do that? So our trust becomes the issue. Trust is something we have as an issue with our parents, with our friends, with our relatives, with our government, with anyone on the street, or even life in general. Can I trust life? Can I trust my children? Can I trust my wife or husband? Can I trust my boyfriend, girlfriend? I can't trust, or can I trust? It's this trust that's significant. And I think you might find, as you deal with your core issue that reverberates, it always has something to do with trust. And I've seen this with people, that they always are having the same issue. And that somehow or another, it has something to do with either not trusting themselves or not trusting others or not trusting God. Even though they don't say that, I don't trust God, but they feel it. They act exactly as if they didn't trust God, but they don't want to say it because that's very dangerous. I mean, can you imagine? You say to God, I don't trust you. You look up, of course, you think God's up there. I don't trust you. You're constantly sticking to me all kinds of bad things. I hate it. I don't trust you. That's heavy to say to God, but that's how we feel. Or problems in marriages. Trust. I love you, but I don't trust you. And because I don't trust you, why should I love you? These things affect each other. Friendships. I may love you, but I don't trust you. And if I don't trust you, why should I have anything to do with you? This is the way it works. So when somebody wants to sell something to you, what do? They gain your trust. They want to sell you a car. So they make it seem as if they are the most trustworthy person you'll ever meet, who only cares about you getting exactly what you need to satisfy your desires and make your life wonderful. So then you think, I trust that person and therefore I will buy. Or when we are making connection to boyfriend, girlfriend, or other persons, what do? We make it so that they shall trust us. That, yes, I am exactly what you want. Whatever it is that you want, I am that. Because there is this, like, shall we say, initial feeling enough that has us say that, yes, this is a good one for us. So we say, whatever it is you want, I'm it. Trust me, I've got what you want. That's what the mating ritual is. All the anthropologists, the sociologists speak about the mating rituals, but that's an anthropology thing. So what they're doing is they're making a mating ritual that will each of them say, I can trust you. I trust you enough to have sex and reproduce and create children because I trust that your genes, your biology and chemistry, and your capacity to take care of me after, if it's from a female point of view, or to take care of the children after, if it's from a male point of view, it's acceptable. I trust you, trust that we can do it. We can do this. It's a trust thing. Mating rituals are a trust thing. Interesting, isn't it? This love and trust. These two things in this realm are married. And what's interesting about any conception of the spiritual realm that we have is that trust is not an issue. There's no issue with trust in the spiritual ideal. Even you look at Radha and Krishna's pastimes from the Goloka point of view, from the out there point of view, that's totally beyond and disconnected. This is the conception we're talking about. There are no trust issues. Bring Radha and Krishna here to earth in Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan, trust issues. Radha's trust issue. Radha's trust issue is, I can't trust Krishna with these gopis. He's always running off with these different gopis. Or even worse, there's Chandravali. She's my rival. The resolution of that is that Radha tries to bring Krishna together with the gopis because it's what he wants. Just think about that one. The total abnegation of the trust issue for the sake of the loved. Draw your own conclusions. Or Radha's husband, the mother of Radha's husband, doesn't trust Krishna. Or when Krishna moves to Dwarka, all the trust issues regarding politics, regarding enemies, it all revolves around lack of trust or the problems relating to trust. In other words, even when God comes to this realm, trust becomes an issue. Because this realm, according to the way we define it, is the realm where trust and love are intimately linked. Now, I ask you, if that's so, what is there about this realm that makes it so? Well, let's start from the point of view of accepting that this dichotomy is correct. Because you can also start from the point of view saying it's not correct. You could start from the point of view of saying that this love and trust thingy is also there in some transcendent spiritual realm. You might be able to justify it by saying that people there are so qualified that they never let the trust issue dominate the loving exchange. They never let themselves get to the point where the trust issue will ruin or break the loving exchange. You could even go so far as to say that if there's somebody, because there's no like rule that says it has to be that way, it's choice, it's nature. Maybe somebody's nature is such that the trust issue does become a problem. For some inexplicable reason, some event caused an insult, and it's not necessarily even that the other person intended it to be that way. It might be that there was no intention to harm. But for some inexplicable reason, we felt it as an insult. And thus, our consciousness became colored by that insult. So we went to this realm, or we came to this realm to work on that insult, to work on that. Again, I've often said the reason we're here is because we think we're not good enough. Let's understand that in context. Let's say that I think I'm not good enough because I didn't trust myself, or I didn't trust others, or in this place where nobody, or many, most, or you could even say nobody, feels that insult, I felt the insult. Of course, it's not that nobody felt it. There's a whole place here where there's filled with somebodies who felt it. But why me? Why I felt like this? Why I felt that insult? And is it others or is it me or what is it? Core issue, fundamental issue. So now how are we going to deal with this? Well, that's the question, isn't it? That is really the question. And I don't have a good answer. I gave some idea that we can try this, for example, rebirthing technique. I gave the idea that we could be aware and deeply understand and deeply embrace the situation. I don't think it happens overnight. I don't think you're going to have some boom revelation and all of a sudden it's not there anymore. I think it's something that's just going to take its time to cure, and something that if we respect ourselves, we're going to work on consciously. If we actually respect ourselves, we're going to consciously work on this by being aware of it. Being aware of it as the reason we're having so many troubles, or the reason that we avoid everybody, or the reason that we don't trust. Because you got love and you got trust. And any community, for instance, a community can be 2 people, 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, whatever. Some group that has some reason to be together, that community rises and falls on trust. You can make so many laws. You can have the best constitution in the whole creation. You can have the best structure. You can figure out every possible iteration of events to create a solution in advance. But it all boils down to trust. And when there's trust, you couldn't care less about all those rules and all those laws and all those things. Because you trust. You say, okay, I trust you. I trust that you're not going to cheat me. I trust that you're going to do your best. Sometimes we're in a situation where we're forced to do that. Like I do a lot of stuff there with you guys there in Russia, for instance. And, well, I don't speak Russian. And I don't think I ever will, because if I do, it's going to change the parameters. It's going to change the balance. But I don't speak Russian, therefore I don't have any access to your legal systems or your way of doing things or even the details of what you do. So I just trust. I am forced to be in a situation of just trusting. And when I don't trust, then the whole thing breaks down. And therefore, the only way in which it can go on is on trust. But I have to feel it. Don't forget, trust is also my issue. There is not one single person anywhere who doesn't have the issue with trust. Everybody has it. Some not very smart people try to speak about me that I have destroyed their trust. I always respond to them in one way or another that, well, you know, you destroyed mine. And actually, you destroyed mine before I destroyed yours. Therefore, I left you. It's not that you rejected me. I left you. That's very hard for them. I'm not proud of it. I'm not saying that this is a good thing. My trust issue was challenged. And I related to it in a way which created for me the only alternative. That's not really fun. It's just what is. Trust is a two-way street. And I'm feeling my trust in others is being challenged on every level. Because it's my core issue. I'll embrace it. Why not? It is my core issue staring me in the face. Trust. I don't have trust. I lost trust. What am I going to do about it? Well, I'm going to work on it. I know I'm not the only one in the world with that. I know everyone in the world's dealing with that. My particular gift is the capacity to explain it, to clarify it, to put it in a package or context where we can understand it, where we can understand how it's affecting us, where we can understand how it is causing the entire life to be affected on all levels. I see it happening globally. Lack of trust everywhere, politically, economically, socially, on the computer scene, so many crooks everywhere and cyber criminals, and everybody is living in an environment where trust is not a given. Lack of trust is the rule. You know, 50 years ago, even 40 years ago, people didn't lock their doors. It just, you didn't bother. Why bother? Why should you lock your door? What's going to happen? No one's going to come in your house. Nowadays, we have bolt on bolt on bolt on lock. There wasn't much more trust previously. Trust in your government, trust in your neighbor, trust in your community. This trust has been systematically dismantled. Amongst the Jewish community, this distrust was incredibly dismantled. 70 years ago? Completely dismantled. And therefore, so many world events that are taking place today are a manifestation of that breakage of trust. And as a subsequent reaction to that, the United States has developed this incredible mistrust of anything Islamic. And therefore, they're making all this insanity everywhere based on lack of trust. You can't even go on an airplane without being threatened with that distrust in this country. Then you need to be X-rayed. It's like wild. The lack of distrust is so permeating. This lack of trust, is so permeating on all levels of society. So our business as spiritualists is to work on this issue of trust. And there's only one way to do it. It's obvious. I should hear everybody screaming at the solution to me. It's obvious how we work on the issue of trust. It is obvious, isn't it? The answer is screaming in your brain, isn't it? Be trustworthy. Be trustworthy. Don't cheat. Don't exploit. Don't be selfish. Don't do something to someone else that you don't want done to yourself. If somebody trusts you with something, respect it. Be trustworthy. Now, when you are trustworthy, someone else will relax enough to also make that choice to be trustworthy. Trustworthy people do not work behind the scenes against each other. Trustworthy people do not try to destroy each other underneath the surface. If they don't like something, they say it. Trustworthy people are those who, what you see is what you get. Trustworthy people are not wearing a mask, pretending to be something they are not, because of some motivation. Trustworthy people are what they are, and they express what they are. Take it or leave it. But this is the package. This is the package, take it or leave it. I shall commit to being trustworthy. If I make a commitment, I'm going to keep it. I shall prove that I'm trustworthy. This is our responsibility. You can meditate for centuries. You can study and do disciplines and do all kinds of practices. Some of the least trustworthy persons are mystics. I suppose if you take that whole huge basket of mystics, you'll find some really not trustworthy persons in there, quite a lot of them. Persons who use that energy for exploiting selfishness, greed, desire to control and manipulate others. So the only solution is whatever platform you're on, whoever you are, to become trustworthy. Isn't that interesting that the whole solution to the love and trust problem is to become trustworthy? Trustworthy means I am worthy of your trust in me. I am predictable. And there's nothing wrong with being predictable. That doesn't mean we're boring. It means on the essential issues, I'm predictable. And if there's a problem, I shall say it. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're dealing with someone who is so unaware of themselves that honesty, even if it's something that's killing you, honesty is not an option. Because you're dealing with such a person who is so stuck in something, who is so absorbed in themselves, that they cannot take it. So even if you wish to be trustworthy, even if you wish to be an open book, even if you wish to just share how you feel, there are limits. If the person to whom your feeling is directed is incapable of accepting it, you cannot say it. You cannot express it. It would be counterproductive. It would be too hurtful. Part of being trustworthy is to not cause harm or pain. If you're being honest and if you're sharing with the idea to make the interaction better, then that sharing has value. But if by doing so you make harm and crush the interaction even more, it is not beneficial to anybody. There is no value to anybody, neither to yourself, neither to the other. So this is a complex situation. It's a complex task to be trustworthy. And I felt that this topic very much goes in connection to what we talked about last week and we have been developing over the previous weeks. It also directly connects to why we are here, what our task and purpose is being here, what our spiritual discipline really is, what our responsibility to ourselves really is, what our responsibility to others really is. And perhaps the best way to be of service is to be a trustworthy person. The only problem is that if other people just start depending on you all the time, they can crush you with their dependency. Trustworthiness requires groupings of trustworthy people. It's not like you have this trustworthy person over there and then all these not very trustworthy persons around them. It'll crush them. We're not tanks. We're not panzers. We are people. So the solution is trustworthy persons are around trustworthy persons. That's community. It's a community of trustworthy persons. Doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what you think, we can work it out. That's easy. That's just arranging things. What's hard is the trustworthiness. Nobody trusts anybody in Moscow. So making a community in Moscow, you got to be kidding me. Why did I even think of it? Because the issue is trustworthiness. Nobody trusts anybody. Okay, you trust others that they're going to screw you if they can. You trust you're going to be exploited. You trust your politicians are crooks. You trust. But that's not how community is built. That's how fragmented society is created. Because it's in the interests of those who have power that society is fragmented. Because it's easy to control fragmented people. Because they just have to do what you say. They have no choice. But if there's a community of trustworthy people, regardless of what they think, they can even disagree on so many issues, but they are trustworthy, there's a power there that is unbreakable. because it's not depending on money, it's not depending on facility, it's not depending on even shared histories or beliefs or ideologies. It is born of that trustworthiness. Questions, and it seems that people found this topic interesting. And many of the questions, I'll move them in front of me, many of the questions have a similar theme. And I suppose I could have predicted that, because it's the first obvious question you would ask. That question that everybody's talking about has two aspects. The first aspect is, if I become trustworthy, how can I guarantee I shall not be cheated by an untrustworthy person? That's a very important point. It's not a valid point, and I'll explain why, but it's very important to discuss. And then the second series of topics are based on, I consider me to be trustworthy, but the persons to whom I relate don't seem to be deserving of my trust. They are not trustworthy, or they don't understand that I am trustworthy. Okay, when I say that they are not trustworthy, that's the same as the first thing, which is, how do I know they're not going to cheat me? In other words, the question is, I give you my trust. How do I know you're not going to cheat me? Because you are not trustworthy. And then the second flavor of this is, you don't understand that I'm trustworthy. So these two flavors are very significant to speak about. I don't think either of them are valid or even correct, but they're very important to discuss. You see? Now, the specific questions are a little bit different, but the flavors are exactly the same. I'm trustworthy, but I don't trust those around me. Or I'm trustworthy, but this other person doesn't know it. Two flavors. Let's discuss them. I'm trustworthy, but I can't trust others around me. That's the fear we have. Why should I become trustworthy if you're not? You're not trustworthy, so I should not be trustworthy to protect myself. Just think about this assumption. I protect myself by not being trustworthy. Because if I was trustworthy, you would cheat me. Isn't that wild? The other person's going to cheat you whether you're trustworthy or not. Isn't it? If they're not trustworthy, which is the assumption, which means if they are cheaters, if you're not trustworthy, that means you're going to cheat me. So whether or not, regardless of my being trustworthy or not, they're going to cheat me. Wild. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. But this is not the point. My being trustworthy does not depend, is not built on others being trustworthy. If it was so, there would never be trustworthiness anywhere. Trustworthiness would simply not exist, because nobody trusts anyone, and therefore no one will feel encouraged to be trustworthy. That's exactly what's happening all around the world, as trust has crumbled utterly. And therefore the revolution, and believe me, it is a revolution, is to become trustworthy. It does not mean you take the money from your wallet, you hand it to some person, and think they're going to take care of it for you. That has nothing to do with you being trustworthy. That's your thinking that they are trustworthy. I have never said that you have to think they are trustworthy. Or let's put it another way, that they are worthy of your trust. Never said it. In this entire lecture, I have never once said that anyone else in this world is worthy of your trust, because that's the problem, trust. The solution is quite opposite, that you become trustworthy so that other people can look at you and feel safe. And by your example, themselves be encouraged to become trustworthy by your example, by the feeling of safety and security they feel around you. That's not an overnight thing. Being trustworthy yourself is a one-person revolution where you turn the entire tide, entire motion of the whole world, and you say, stop. I step out of that, stand opposed to that, because I shall be trustworthy. I shall be dependable, predictable. I shall do what I say I shall do. I shall keep my word. I shall honor my commitments. I shall do what is required to maintain that which I have declared I will. That doesn't mean you're a victim of anything. If you are in a commitment, a contract, let's say an economic agreement, and you are honoring your side, if the other party is not honoring their side, the contract that you committed to is broken. In other words, a contract is a two-way street. Now, when I'm trustworthy, it means that I myself am honest. My dealings will be honest. I will respect other people and not exploit them, cheat them, because I'm trustworthy. You can trust me. That's what I'm saying. Not me in particular. Maybe you trust me or not. That's not the point. But you can trust a trustworthy person. Whether you do or not is not my concern right now. Whether you do or you do not trust a trustworthy person is not the issue. The issue is that we become trustworthy, worthy of trust, because we are standing with integrity. That's the revolution. In a world of cheating, in a world of duplicity, in a world of exploitation, we are standing opposed to that flood of negativity. And we say, I shall not engage in that. But we also honor our contracts. We honor our commitments. But these are two-way streets. We can be pillars of trustworthiness. And in that way, we can give an opportunity for that person we have made contract with to reciprocate. If they do not, we can say so, that this is breaking the contract. That's another issue. We protect ourselves in that way. But you do not protect yourself by not being trustworthy. just because someone else is. Just because someone else is an idiot, you don't protect yourself by being an idiot. You protect yourself by maintaining your integrity, by being trustworthy, by being honest, by being true to yourself. These are the essential principles here. So, in other words, being trustworthy does not mean anything in relationship to the trust of others in you. It's simply that you have turned the tide. In other words, you have worked against the flow of this degradation of trust by declaring that you are trusting in yourself and being trustworthy. I don't know how to explain it better than that. Now, the second idea that, okay, I'm trustworthy, but you don't believe it. Well, first of all, you cannot dictate how other people perceive you. You can be the best you can be. How they perceive you is really up to them. You can try to adjust their perception. You can explain yourself, or you can act in a proper way. You can act dependably. Like, for example, when there are examples, and I think this example is really interesting. There are cases of children who are in foster homes because their parents died or something, gave them up. And when they're older, if no one adopted them, or perhaps even they were adopted a few times, but it didn't work out, the families gave them back. So they develop the idea that no one wants them, and that even if someone takes them, after a short period of time, they will give them up. So the way they usually act is they act in such a way that that short period of time will go faster. They act as they expect the result. They know that they're going to be given up, so they act in a very rascal kind of way, maybe even nasty, so that it will accelerate the process of rejection. In other words, they know they're going to get rejected, so they act in a way to accelerate the rejection, so that the rejection will just happen and get over with quick so they can get on with their lives. And for those who are really, shall we say, aware adopters or foster parents, they see that. And they don't respond to it in that way. They prove to these children that, okay, what you're doing is wrong. It's really upsetting us, but we're not going to give you up no matter what you do. Now, just saying it is not enough. You have to do it. And after some time, when those kids see that they are protected in that way, they generally become super good kids and work like mad to please those parents, those foster parents. It is a story that is repeated often amongst children who are abandoned in one way or another. So being trustworthy is something very, very, very deeply significant. Deeply significant for the sake of this world. So you can't prove to somebody that you're trustworthy. You can't force them to trust you. But you can act consistently so that they will learn to trust you if it's something that is in their interests to do. After all, it's all voluntary. All these interactions we have are voluntary. There are no real contracts in personal interactions that can't be broken. It is the nature of contracts to be broken. Okay, perhaps you might suffer when that happens. But it's not like there's some absolute principle that says a contract will not be broken. But this kind of, shall we say, dedication to the self, that embrace of one's integrity, to be trustworthy, is the challenge. And it is the revolution to change the world. Only possible in myself, in ourselves. And how other people react to it is really their issue, their situation, something they have to work on. We have our work, they have their work. And honestly, if you're not ready to be trustworthy, then figure out why. What is it in you that is preventing you from being a trustworthy person? And deal with it. So I think that that kind of dealt with all of the issues that were expressed to me in questions. And, you know, this issue of trust only manifests when there is some love, or, I mean, it, of course it manifests in economic things, legal things, sure, all right. There's, when you make a contract, there's a certain amount of trust, because no matter how you phrase the contract, it all depends ultimately on how you trust each other, because otherwise it's really not going to work so well. But the most significant aspect is in personal relationships, how we relate and deal with each other, because the pain is much greater in personal relationships. And don't forget, we tend to think everyone else is just like us. If I'm not trustworthy, no one else is trustworthy. If I'm not honest, no one else is honest. You know, it all begins with us. And oppositely, if I'm honest, I expect, or I resonate well with the honesty of others. If I'm trustworthy, I expect and resonate well with that in others. I encourage it. So therefore, it all begins with how we think about ourselves. How we think about ourselves. Yep. And that, honestly, I think is the sum and substance of it all.